What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back to the Brand Archetypes Podcast, everyone. This is Kevin Scarrett. And I am with the sexy Amy Zander. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Kevin.
Okay, so the listeners are thinking to themselves, okay, what the heck is going on? Well, the title of our podcast today is Sexy versus Not So Sexy Branding and Marketing. And what we're not talking about today necessarily is the Victoria's Secret commercials here, although those can be pretty dang sexy. What we're talking about are what gives an industry mass marketing appeal where really others don't have it. There are some industries as a marketer that are just super easy to do your job, and others it's just a struggle. So we're going to talk about that. So what are your thoughts, Amy?
Yeah, so when I talk about a sexy industry, what I mean is kind of like what you said, that the products and the services that the company is offering are something that is pretty easy to market because so many people use it or need it on a regular basis. And it can also mean that it is a fun and enjoyable, they're fun and enjoyable products and services. Like, food is fun. Everybody eats.
Love food.
Yeah. Car insurance, though, not so exciting. So let's delve into this a bit further. First, we're going to explore some categories of industries, and then we'll give some more specific examples.
Well, so before we do that, we could talk about how people in general, not necessarily marketers, break down industries. Like, an obvious breakdown would be business to business, B2B, or B2C, business to consumer. Or you could say products versus services, or are you global or local or hyperlocal? Are you a highly niche product or service, or are you really generic? Do you tend to swing towards both genders or focus on one gender? I mean, so there's lots and lots of ways that you can break down a product or a service or an industry. So the question is, can we break down into more obscure categories like sexy versus not so sexy? And for marketers, it's definitely a worthwhile exercise to think about the sexiness of your industry, because it definitely impacts what you do and how easy your job is. So, Amy, let's talk about some specific examples.
Sure. There's a couple right off the top of my head that are easy to tag as quote unquote sexy industries. And again, we just mean that they're easier to market, not that they have sex appeal necessarily. But those industries are food. Again, we already said that because everybody eats, everybody can get excited about food. There's the whole industry of food photography and food porn, right? So that's a term. So food is often really easy to market. Travel is another one. Most people like to travel, look at amazing pictures of beaches and things like that. So the travel industry.
But don't use the phrase travel porn. That's totally different.
Travel porn. No.
That's bad.
Right. So another one is music. Most people have, specific music preferences and the genres and things like that they like. And music is highly visual as well as audible, so that's easy. And then fashion, that's another easy one. It's very visual, and people again have their own tastes and opinions about fashion. And then let's see, like hobbies and crafts, they're a little bit more niche, but they're definitely easier to market because people are pretty passionate about their hobbies and crafts. And if they have something they're interested in, they're going to want to see more of it and hear more about it. So those are some things that are easier to market.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're all characterized by just a couple of attributes. They're, like I said, they're visual. People are passionate about them, and they're generally spaces where people are willing to spend their leftover dollars if they have any, their disposable income.
Ah, yeah, I totally connected when you were talking about visual, but definitely that whole passion thing. So I would agree with your whole list, and I think that you could probably easily expand that list just by going onto social media. I mean, especially like sites like Pinterest, you know, where people share with Pinterest, they're visually sharing their interests. So if we were to do that, I could see adding, well, I'm just thinking about my Pinterest feed. I'm thinking things like humor, health and fitness, I don't know, beauty and cosmetics. Would you add that? Beauty and cosmetics kind of goes along with fashion.
Yeah.
Romance and relationships, or lots of stuff going on there. Interior design, home decor, that kind of thing. So, yeah, okay, that's a good starter list. Of course, there's, you know, degrees of this, but pretty solidly, all of the things that we've talked about are in that pocket of sexy industries. So, what would be some not so sexy industries? And to be clear, we're talking about branding and marketing. Not necessarily the industry or the companies. It's the industry and not necessarily the companies themselves, right? You know, and, right. And this is also not to say we're excluding people or companies who have selected the brand archetype, the lover, right? So that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. So what do you think are some not so sexy industries?
Right. So it's definitely harder to answer. But some that pop into my head are insurance, industrial and manufacturing, data and math, like actuaries and accountants and taxes, maybe like uncomfortable industries like mortuary and funeral services, or, you know, like a doctor that specializes in something like hemorrhoids or something that we like don't want to talk about. Kevin, you with me?
Sorry, I nodded off a bit there. yeah, boy, when you started in with insurance and industrial / manufacturing, I'm like, oh my God, yeah, those are definitely not sexy industries. So yeah, it's a little harder to lock down. Yeah, those were pretty bad. I would throw into that mix things like the topics of shareability or engagement or virality. You mentioned uncomfortable industries. It's not to say that any of these industries can't create marketing that's shareable or engaging or viral, or, you know, if you've got in an uncomfortable industry like, you know, mortuary services, that's a tough one. But there are amazing examples of people who've creatively gotten around these issues. And that's kind of what we're talking about today. So it's just that they're these industries, the not so sexy industries, they're not naturally tending to these ideas that give you an automatic lift. So Amy, what does this mean if you find yourself and you're an owner or an employee or an agency representing one of these companies that are not so sexy?
Sure. Well, first you have to frame your expectations, and you have to be aware that there are things that will definitely be more difficult in your marketing and that you will have to get a little bit more creative. Mm-hmm. So one of those things about like framing your expectations is that the speed at which you grow your networks and your followers on social media might be a little bit slower.
Definitely.
So one of the things that we didn't mention this industry earlier, but one of the things that you and I have both struggled with a bit is like real estate agents, finding followers and things like that, because they fall into that category of, you know, there's only a handful of times during your life when you need a real estate agent, and you either need one or you don't. Right. So real estate agents that do really well in their marketing and their social media are the ones that can provide a lot of information that homeowners are interested in, like, you know, do-it-yourself projects and interior design and things like that, like information that they would need all the time, not just when they're buying or selling a home.
Right.
So that just understand that, you know, you're looking at the long game to get your followers. And a lot of that can be solved with, you know, paid advertising on social media with Facebook and LinkedIn and things like that.
Yeah, I think the issue of real estate sales, it kind of fits in the same pocket as car dealerships. We talked about, you know, how they behave in their marketing. A slight difference is that people can get really, really, really excited about their cars, and they certainly get excited about their homes, but the process of buying and selling a house or a car isn't really fun. And the salespeople with these large ticket item products, really, they have a reputation of being hard sales, including real estate people. So I think that there's kind of an off-puttedness of the general perception of the sales process that makes the real estate a lot less sexy than it could be, you know? Because
right.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, yeah. Yeah, I also think that the issue, like you were talking about earlier, about engagement levels of, you know, getting people engaged in social media, person to person. You know, if someone's talking about the new house that they're bought, I'm going to be a lot more engaged in talking to them than I am about a real estate agent talking about a new house because I know they're trying to sell it. You know, so there's that issue. So, you know, what about engagement levels, right?
Right, exactly. People simply, you know, will not be as willing to share your ideas as much as others. So you have to be much more creative to overcome these challenges. And I think sometimes for the engagement levels, like if you pose a lot of questions, if you use your testimonials and reviews that you've gotten from other people in really creative ways, sometimes it's easier to let other people talk about how great you are than yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, that's always help. Yeah, that always helps. And, you know, you just have to know that you're going to have to work a little bit harder to get those followers and to get that engagement. But the more creative you are, the more you will stand out, right?
Right. I can definitely see all of that happening.
Yeah.
In fact, a couple of episodes ago, we interviewed our mutual client, Dave Ritchie, who, if those listeners who are following along, remember that he is the owner of a barcode labeling company. Now, as soon as I say that, all the listeners now are thinking, yep, not sexy. Barcode labeling, yay. So this is definitely not a sexy industry, and Dana does indeed face all of these same challenges, and I'm pretty sure he's listening right now, and he knows that we love him dearly, and he's not offended at all that we're talking about his industry not being sexy. So what can we do about Dana's industry in it not being so sexy?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, he's really embraced the archetype that he has. He's the hero archetype. Again, we talked about that when we interviewed mm-hmm. him. And he's been doing this for several yeah. years. And that is one of the things that has made him stand out and makes his marketing and things like that way more interesting. He, you know, he changed the name of his company, things like that. And one of the things that we're doing with him recently is we started a new blog series and video series where he is posing a real and specific problem that he solved for a client and, you know, what their problem was, how he solved it, what the results were. And these are relatable problems that many of his clients face. Like one, for instance, is just that he has an automatic labeling tool so that your labels don't have to be hand applied to your products. They can be automatically labeled, which frees up a lot of time for the employees. They can be doing something else that's more important. And things like that. So with the video and making it visual and making it a story and a problem solving thing, that's just makes it way more relatable.
Okay, so let's talk about some not so sexy industries and tips that for people who are in those industries. You know, so don't give up hope. There are some things that you can do. And I would say that the first thing that we would both strongly suggest for people in those not-so-sexy industries is to pick an archetype. If you don't have an archetype, you are missing out on shifting your brand in marketing to having a powerful emotional focus. if you can connect with people emotionally versus intellectually, you're going to have a much easier time with things like the things that Amy was talking about earlier, network growth and engagement and storytelling and all that good stuff, right? So having emotional focus is a very good thing.
Absolutely. The storytelling makes your marketing more relatable and personal. It's just easier to digest,
Right. So how about researching and creating a list of things that your customer is interested in? This is a tip that I've been telling my customers for years now, because it's a paradigm shift. You know, if you think about trying to sell lawnmowers, let's use that as an example. If you talk about the width of the deck and the horsepower of the engine and, you know, the quality of the steel, it's like, you know, who really cares? But if you're buying a lawnmower, Amy, let's say you and your husband Chris are out to buy a lawnmower, what kinds of things are you also interested in? You know, people who buy lawnmowers are interested in yards and lawns and landscaping and homeownership and, you know, the things that a person are going to be interested in personally are the things that your marketing should tap into. You know, so like, how about backyard activities for the family or summer party theme ideas? If you've got this awesome yard that you're tending to with your brand new lawnmower, you're going to want to show it off to your friends and you're going to want to have all that fun out in that backyard. And those are the things that are going to be interesting to those people, right? So it's more about storytelling and connecting with people than it is about talking to your argument. And for a lot of people, that's a really big paradigm shift, right? For example, Dana's Barcode Labeling Company. And as soon as I say the phrase barcode labeling company, you know, people's eyes start to glaze over. Who are his target audience members and what are they interested in? That's what Dana had to ask. And the answer is they're mostly manufacturing and managers and manufacturing operation people and laboratory owners. Those people are going to be interested in those things. You know, what are the laboratory processes and challenges that laboratory owners face? You start talking about those things and people are going to, they're going to dial right in. You know, if you start talking about the quality of the adhesive on your labels, they just start to snooze, right?
It's all about that engagement, especially on social media marketing and the things that you can put out there on social media that's going to get people to comment, like, share, talk about things, things like that. So it's making that connection. The storytelling will help doing that, posing the questions and things like that, talking about your engagement.
Yeah, it's kind of like goes back to your tip about increasing storytelling, you know, getting those reposts. That's really critical. And if you think about that in advance, if instead of just creating a marketing piece that is kind of interesting, if you then shift your thinking to what can I do to get them to want to share it, to get them to like it, to click on it, to, you know, to do more than just read it. You know, I've always felt that these industries, these not so sexy industries, will benefit from this approach. And what happens is you realize that testimonials and case studies and featuring products and featuring customers leads you to this process of storytelling, things like that. This process brings what you're doing down to a human level. It's not about your products. It's about people and, you know, the interests that they have and the challenges that they face, right?
Absolutely. I agree. So the other thing that people often want to focus on with their marketing that kind of goes along with the whole storytelling thing is this concept of a viral video. I mean, every company would hugely benefit if something they did in marketing went viral, right? So a lot, but some companies are hyper focused on this. And the problem with it is that you can't always intentionally create something that's going to go viral. It seems like these things happen unexpectedly when like the stars align and everything happens. And if you're hyper focused on this whole viral video or viral meme concept, it's too much effort, and it's not something that you can intentionally create all the time. And some businesses put too much of their marketing ideas or efforts into this whole viral video basket kind of thing. And so I don't know. I just really caution people to not focus on that too much. So have you ever had that experience where a client comes to you, either they have this concept or they have already something made that they want to go viral?
It happens way too often. So when our listeners hear that you shouldn't depend on it, this is not, what we're not saying is don't try, because if you try to create a viral video, you're going to create an awesome video. And if you do it properly, it's going to be within brand. It's going to talk about your product or service. It's going to be fun and interesting. It's going to have all the things that you want. But I would say that you have like less than 0.1%, maybe a tenth or a hundredth of that, of a chance of a video actually going viral. In virality, kind of by definition, there's the point at which it hits inflection, the rate of growth, and so there's a technical definition of what virality means, and you can look that up. But the odds of actually doing that, like you said, the stars have to align. It just doesn't happen often enough where you should have an expectation that you can achieve it. So just kind of set that idea aside, because it's a path, it's a road to frustration, right?
It is. And we had that mutual client, they were the nursing home client. They created a really cool music video, and they came to us and they wanted us to help them make it viral. And we talked to them about exactly what, you just said, framing the expectations, and we created some marketing campaigns, and we pushed it out. And I think in some ways it did really gain a lot of traction in their niche market and their locally, and in with some other nursing homes and stuff really noticed it. But it was a kick-ass video. It was so cool for what it was. It was cutting edge. Nobody had ever done something like this before. It was a really awesome, but it didn't go quote-unquote viral like the owners were expecting. And so they were kind of disappointed, and you and I had to do a lot of reminding them that even though this didn't go viral like you think it went viral, it's still an amazing marketing piece, and you can use it over and over and over again. It was on brand. It was really cool. So, that goes completely back to what you're saying. If you do create some marketing piece in the hopes that it goes viral, you're still creating something great, even if it doesn't go viral in the way that you intended it to. But then, like you said, there's these unexpected things that happen. I partner with a local video company, and we create what we call them Uno cards, and they're a 60 to 90 second video promo, kind of like a talking business card. And we create these for a lot of local businesses. And we created one earlier in the beginning of the year for a printing company. And this company's value is really focused on supporting their community. They're really involved in community and nonprofits, and do a lot of work that way. And so they kind of talked about that in their video a little bit more than just their printing services, just because that's what they always do. It wasn't, necessarily for any particular reason. And then when the pandemic happened, this company started making all these yard signs for restaurants, like, yes, we're open, takeout only, support local businesses. And they printed all these for free and gave them to tons of local businesses to help them with their marketing, because it's just what this company does. So that, coupled with the pandemic, the free yard signs, this video that we had made for them that already aligned with that, it went locally viral, and it was unexpected. We had no idea that was going to happen when we first recorded this video back in January or whenever it was that we did it. And then this video was noticed and picked up by some local media outlets that then reached out to the company for more interviews, and it really boosted their sales and things like that. And this video got them noticed, but we had no idea that was going to happen. It was exactly like you said, the stars just all aligned. And that's when
equate this to the idea of when people say, oh, I'm going to drop $1 million on a Super Bowl ad. They're really missing out on what that cost actually means. And, way more than half the time, the people who post up Super Bowl ads,
people don't even remember them the next day. It's only the handful of funny ones that people are really tracking, and that's what people are trying to shoot for, is to get that kind of viral lift. But if you drop $1 million and nothing happens, wow, that is a huge disappointment. So we recommend go for good videos. You know, no one creates a video saying to themselves, hey, let's create a really super lackluster video today. You know, no one's doing that. So if you're not doing that, you're actually shooting for virality. Just don't have that expectation, right? So before we wrap up, it seems like we should touch a little bit more on how, you know, the archetypes. Let's talk more about the archetypes, right? Let's say you are an insurance company and you pick the jester. You know, think Aflac or Geico or Progressive. You know, right out of the chute, your marketing is allowed to be fun and creative. Kind of the point, right? But you could instead go with a lover archetype and spin things with a sexy twist. You know, so do you remember the commercials from Old Spice with the sexy spokesman? He's a little bit jestery as well, but what they did is they definitely took what was not very sexy, Grandpa's cologne, and they reinvented themselves. Did they intend for all of these videos to go viral the way they did? Not at first, which is kind of what we're saying. They just did it because it was a good idea, and switching to a combination of sexy and jester, you know, that difference of approach to connect with people was really what they were shooting for. It was pretty dang successful, and you know, in hindsight, it absolutely went viral, but the intent up front was not to go that way. You know, so pick your archetype. It's the beautiful combination: picking the archetype, telling stories, connecting with people. So if you're in a not so sexy industry, do just that. Pick your archetype, connect with people, start telling stories. It'll go a long, long way. So this has been a good one. I was actually looking forward to this one because it's something that we talk about a lot with our customers, and it kind of makes sense for it to be fit into a podcast. So Amy, why don't you give us a wrap up?
Absolutely. Like Kevin said, if you find yourself in a not so sexy industry or you're struggling with your marketing and you want a little nudge, feel free to contact us with your questions you might have. We'd love to talk to you about what archetype might work for you. The first step could be going to brandarchetypes.com and taking our free questionnaire. It's 100 and some questions, and it ranks the archetypes in order based on your questions, and start from there. We also have word lists for each archetype. They're just pages of words and phrases that relate to that particular archetype to kind of give you an idea of some things that you could do with your marketing. So we have those word lists available. You can reach out to us if you'd like those. And please follow us on all the social platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, LinkedIn, Instagram, at Brand Archetypes.
Thanks for your time this week, Amy, and we will talk to you next week.
You're welcome. Sounds good, Kevin. Have a good week.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.